Brandstorming?
Now you've started. Brandstorming is a stupid-ass name. I don't know why you want to call it.
Brandstorming. Well,
okay, you can go start another podcast about colon health called Brandstorming.
Dude, I'm going to take my four followers.
Okay. Brandstorming.
We started. We think that the name of this podcast is Brainstorming.
No.
Got him.
Damn it.
It's, got him.
You totally messed me
this
up.
This is got actually him. A commercial for Fiber One.
Yeah. Barnstorming. Barnstorming PA. We've been talking about titles. We could have a tagline, you know, it's not funny.
I like Barnstorming PA tagline, it's not funny.
Yeah. Okay. Although I kind of like just visually, you know, funny / not funny. Because it's like, it like captures, like Sherry Jacobson had this on Facebook, but I think it really captures that, like, you know, that tension between like, it's so messed up we have to laugh, and it's not, it's just like everything is so messed up we can't possibly be laughing, but
yeah,
whatever.
Well, totally.
Okay, so we're going to talk. Well,
check us out on Facebook if you haven't, Barnstorming PA.
Barnstorming PA. Also, we have a website, barnstormingpa.org.
We have a website?
We have a website, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Taylor and I have been busy.
Yeah, well, Chip's,
well, Chip's making money. The working man. Well, we do have a habit of introducing ourselves. My name is Jordy Comis. I try and be the idea person. I'm going to be mediating this.
My name is Taylor. I'm sort of the young buck of the crowd.
The insider, the activist.
Yeah,
I mean campaign activist.
Campaign activist, all that kind of stuff.
You got to 1,000 doors knocked on.
Yeah, we've knocked on 1,000 doors.
Is that Union County, mostly East Buffalo?
You know, Dave Jacobson, shout out, has been knocking a ton in Union Township. I think he's the dark horse candidate of Union County. I think he could really win.
Well,
and I was calling through his list of solid supporters to see if any of them wanted yard signs on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's Democrats, it's Independents, it's Republicans, it's Libertarians.
That's great.
He's knocked on a lot of doors.
We should work to get him some publicity.
I think that's, well, this is,
yeah, above and beyond this.
Above
too.
And beyond our podcast.
Our 8 followers. It's doubled.
You know, we had nearly 30 views this last podcast.
So. Really?
So yeah, maybe we could shoot for 40.
How many of those are your mom?
Yeah. At least half.
And I have to say, I love your mom. She's great.
I love my mom too.
Well,
she'll probably listen to this.
Yeah, she told me.
And my dad.
Yeah.
They'll both listen to this.
I don't interact with your dad as much, but what did you put in my cider? What is that lump? Is that like a... I'm drinking some cider.
That didn't dissolve right. That was supposed to be a roofie.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's not a funny joke.
That's an orange peel or something.
Okay. Chip Harvey Weinstein.
Oh,
that's also not a funny
boy,
joke.
Boy, I tell you what, goes
but
to show
does
you.
My not funny joke balance out his not funny joke?
No, it's just two negatives don't equal positive.
All right,
two not funnies do not make a
politically
funny.
Correctness.
All right,
political correctness.
Chip, let's get introduce this. Yourself.
Yeah, I'm Chip.
What do you bring to this podcast, Chip? Why are you here?
He's on the other side of the bar here.
You know, I'm here because you know, we live in a rural Pennsylvania County, and it's heavily Trump, and I'm here because it's time we started talking about progressive values.
Chip's the agitator.
Definitely.
Yeah, you definitely. I mean, you know, you've been, I don't want to necessarily get into that, but just in general.
I mean, he's an organizer.
He is an organizer.
But also an agitator.
Also an agitator.
I'm a agitator, but mostly an organizer, I feel.
I think that that's an important thing to talk about because, in fact, actually, maybe given the New York Times article we're going to talk about later, you know, one of the reasons we do this is because there are different roles in building a political and social movement.
Right.
And we have to value what those roles are.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a little more behind the scenes. You know, I'm willing to organize rallies and stuff, but I've never done civil disobedience, and
it's not my.
I
forte.
Think Penn's presentation last week about, you know.
By the way, Penn is
Garvin.
Penn Garvin. She does a lot of stuff with active community training, which is another, you know, hashtag resistance group that emerged. But go ahead.
No, she talks about the different roles: the mm-hmm. change agent, the rebel, mm-hmm.
the reformer,
the reformer, and everybody has a, yeah,
which is probably not any of us.
Yeah,
but I was talking with Rob earlier, and we were talking about, you know, this Confederate flag burning, and I was he was talking about, you know,
I didn't hear flag, and I just heard Confederate burning. I was like, well, you're burning people?
Like, no.
That's a little too far.
No. He was talking about, you know, the real things that Rosa Parks did, Colin Kaepernick, Martin Luther King Jr. was agitation, disrupting things. You know, and I was saying, you know, like, I think the beautiful things that they did was the organizing. You know, and it's almost like a moot point. Like, who am I to, who, you know, who is anybody to say which was the most effective thing they did? But, you know.
Well, let's that's a good point. And well, I actually want to say more about that.
Yeah,
I, you know,
let's should we reel it in?
No. I want to say one more kind of broad thing about that. Like, I saw an Inconvenient Sequel last week, the Al Gore, you know, sequel about An Inconvenient Truth. Chip just turned on the timer to help us stay on track.
Okay, that's good.
And in it, there were people talking about, you know, how do you do change, and what do we do? And in other conversations, have been there's these discussions about, like, is art important? Is organizing important? Is electoral power important?
It's all important.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, you can tie yourself up in knots a little bit, like saying, like, but what's the causal order? Like, what comes first?
Yeah.
You know? And you look at historical examples.
It's a stupid thing to burn yourself with.
Yes, and you can't know. I mean, these things are a lot of factors come together.
Yeah, it's
and,
like, all this shit happens, and then this happens.
Right.
It's totally...
Right.
What are we talking about?
By the way, if you ever want to steal Jordy's phone, his passcode is the letter Z.
Oh, good.
Great. Did you hear that? The letter Z.
So, do you know why?
Because you're zany? Because
my wife's last name is Zimmerman. It's easier to do than C for Comus. All right. So, I wanted to come back to...
You are still zany.
Thank you. I feel like we were we said something that related to the New York Times. There was a New York Times article that my wife Virginia, shout out to her,
running for
school director, school board director
in Lewisburg,
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, that's where we are. That she had found about. It's called the resistance raising big money upends liberal politics. I read it. You got a chance to read it, Taylor?
I read it.
Now I can't remember what we were talking about that referred to it, but we won't worry about that. Chip has been busy, probably didn't
agitating.
Get a chance to read it.
I didn't read it.
Okay, I mean, I didn't want you to feel like teacher calling you out. So let me pull out a couple of quotes.
But that's what he did.
That is what I just did. And it'll be fun to, because this is actually fun. This is like, you know,
Chip. What's the title of the article?
Oh, didn't I just say that? The Resistance, Raising Big Money Upends Liberal Politics. Yeah. And so one of the because we're talking about different roles,
yeah.
And so let me say at the beginning, I like this article. It gave me two things I liked about it. One, it gave me some information about stuff that's going on that I wasn't as aware of, and two, it affirmed, you know, since Trump got elected, you know, we've
been
part of
a proliferation of groups.
Yeah, there's been this proliferation, this mushrooming, and this true, you know, grassroots uprising, and we've been a part of it locally, regionally, and statewide. And it was interesting to see. And it was an affirmation that, you know, us as, like, independently thinking, concerned people came to the same conclusion that people across the country have.
Yeah, it's cool.
That is cool. But the article also, what I didn't like, seemed to me to be this sort of pretty common mainstream media trope of trying to talk about how people on the left are at each other's throats, you know, all that kind of stuff. And of course, sometimes that's true, but I feel like sometimes, you know, the media want a narrative that they're used to, and that's one they can go to. So I'm going to read a couple quotes. It'd be fun to get Chip's reaction. So one is, they're talking about the jockeying between groups, donors, and operatives being usually behind the scenes. But this jockeying for power in the sort of big left Democratic coalition, here's the quote, has grown acrimonious at times, with upstarts complaining they are, quote, being boxed out by a liberal establishment that they say enables the sort of Democratic timidity that paved way for the Trump presidency. So, Chip, I'd love to know what you think about that, because I know you've been concerned about Democratic timidity.
Oh, that's a huge concern for me.
And what they're saying is that sort of the resistance and then it's attracting money that part of the resistance is people criticizing
the money makes us weak.
To say more about that.
Well, if you give a lot of money to something, then you expect to have you know, those who have the gold make the rules, right?
Yeah.
And if you give a lot of money to something, then you expect to have those rules followed, or you'll cut off the money.
U.S. soccer, for example.
I'm sorry. Somebody take the knife out of my back. Oh.
All right, go ahead.
Do we really? And did you see, by the way, the Panama goal that shouldn't have been a goal?
We're getting off track. I'm sorry.
You did that. You know, and I think right now the fight between the old guard and new guard in the Democratic Party, the money and the progressive activist grassroots stuff needs to happen right away.
Yeah.
I mean, there are, you know, we have to, you know, call it like we see it. And the Democratic Party, at least in this state, is not being run well at all. at all. And it's a real shame, and both of you guys remember what happened last year with Jim Byrne, who was the state chair for the Democratic Party.
That wasn't that was 2014.
It's funny you say both of you, because I don't know anything about this, so educate me.
Jim Byrne was the state chairman of the PA Dems, kicked out.
Mm-hmm. So that they could push McGinty over Sestak.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah.
The establishment came in and
I'm
got
a
rid
big
of a
Jim Byrne fan.
Really popular, hardworking, good state chair, and they put in place... a guy that just, I mean, I haven't heard a good word yet, and I'm not going to mention his name, but...
I mean, the chairman of the Pennsylvania...
whatever.
Look it up if you want.
Yeah, look it up. But, you know, the point is that the party is not being run right, and part of what we have to do is we have to take over the party, period. I mean, this old guard, new guard fight has to happen. It has to happen now, and it has to happen fast.
And so here's something did you want to say anything about Democratic timidity?
Yeah, you know, honestly, like... the thing that I had to say about the article is different from what you're talking about right now.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Change the topic.
So the thing that I actually thought was most helpful for me was the bit at the end where they were talking about, you know, as you're getting into, you know, this sort of protest politics and, mm-hmm. and this proliferation of groups. And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, not on this podcast, but privately, about Silicon Valley. You know, you invest in 10 mm-hmm. different companies and expect maybe one of them to go up, one of them to succeed. This is the same sort of deal. You know, all of these big money groups are just splitting their money into all of these different organizations, Swing Left, mm-hmm. Progressive Turnout Project, Indivisible, you know, all these different groups, they're just springing up. And I think this is a good thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's sort of the strongest will survive, natural selection, that sort of thing.
Until the Democratic Party gets back to the basics of organizing, not agitating, but organizing and getting back into these rural communities where our values should be their values,
mm-hmm. yeah.
The fact that these rural communities are overwhelmingly Republican is a failure on our part.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at a town like Lewistown, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Not Lewisburg. Lewistown.
What do you know about Lewistown? You go there a lot? I've never been there.
I've been there a few times. Teresa Hobbs, Democratic chair in Mifflin County,
right.
Pennsylvania. Oh, fantastic
is
chair.
Is that where Lewistown is?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's probably one of the best party, you know, county party chairs in Pennsylvania, but they get absolutely no resources. These are areas, it's an old steel working town. They heavily Republican. There's no reason except for the fact that the Democrats have not invested a single dime in there for the past 20 years.
See, this is something that I think privately, not on the podcast, we've talked about, but this kind of, I refer to it as like, you know, kind of managerialism. I'm sorry to make an ism word, but it's often around this, the political operative class, which to some extent, both of you guys have been in. I realize that, you know, you don't necessarily see it that way, but it's, what I'm trying to say is there's a certain logic to it, right? Like if you're like, you got to win this campaign, you got to win this many seats in the state, and you look at it and you're like, well, where have we done well? Where should we invest resources? You have a scarce budget. Like, I'm just saying, like, I'm sympathetic to like why that happens, why there's underinvestment in that. But to turn it around, but that's part of the problem. And I think that it may not be timidity.
It's a self-fulfilling process.
It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, a Pygmalion effect. You got to balance a kind of pragmatism about what can be done now with looking towards the long term.
For sure.
I mean, at companies like this, you know, if you milk your cash cows and you don't put anything into R&D, you're not going to have any products down the road.
Yeah,
This state has 1 million voter registration advantage for the Democratic Party. There are 1 million more registered voters for the Democratic Party than there are for the Republican Party. And we're losing to Trump. And we also have 13 Republican congressmen and five
Democrats.
We are overwhelmingly Democratic by voter registration, and they control the
state. No,
and
absolutely.
That's a thing. That's a problem.
You know, and I actually, you know, we need to do this in a you know, a more concentrated podcast. But I was sort of digging into the 2016 election results in Pennsylvania, and it's not like we didn't turn out in Philadelphia. It's that counties like Potter County that normally go 40% Democrat, 60% Republican, swung 10% to Trump.
Where is Potter County? What's it named?
Potter County's in like North Pennsylvania, North Central.
North Central
Pennsylvania. You know, and Union County is actually kind of the exception, but I think the Hillary campaign falsely assumed that the level of the vote share of these smaller rural counties. I think that they thought they were at a voting floor.
Okay.
But in reality, if you don't play in these areas and you don't actually like look at and.
This was, I'm sorry to interrupt Taylor, but this was posted today on Twitter by a guy who's unhacking the vote, Mike Farb.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he's claiming based on the data, and if you look at the data, the election results out of Ohio mimic the hacked elections in the Ukraine and Russia.
In terms of the numbers or in terms of the tactics?
It gets into technical detail, but see how this skews?
Yeah.
This is Ohio, and it's supposed to be in the middle. You have to read the thread.
Right.
But anyway, it's yeah. So let's, we need to have at some Russia not only influenced our election, they hacked the totals.
Entirely sure. Did you just steal my cider? God damn it, Chip. whatever. You'll just have to give me another. I don't know. Like, anecdote here. The Obama campaign in 2012 had an organizer on the ground in November of 2011. I remember canvassing with Mark Donovan, an employee.
That was 08.
No. In 2011.
That was Sarah.
No.
Mark Donovan came back? He was the organizer in
LA. He was the regional.
Guys, this is inside baseball.
So the Obama campaign had and he was the regional field organizer here. He was here in November 2011. The first, I remember meeting with the organizer for this area, and he was just getting here in August of 2016.
Yeah.
Like that's what's called not trying.
Okay, but we've moved far away from the article, and we need to wrap this up. The article basically says that the resistance, you know, broadly, which maybe didn't look like much, has become so effective that it's starting to attract some of the big dollar amounts. I want to introduce something that maybe we'll do, which is like bookmark. Like, I think we should bookmark talking about this a little bit more. They mentioned Reid Hoffman, some of the other groups, which I've only known a little bit about. CrowdPAC was one. I think Win the Vote or something. But so two issues I'd like to bookmark or play, you know, put a placeholder that we can come back to. One is that. The other is, like, this is not new. I mean, one of the targets in the article is the Center for American Progress, one of the targets for the resistance. But to me, the Center for the American Progress grew out of trying to push back against the kind of blue dog Democrats, and what was the thing Clinton had, the Democratic Leadership Council, the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council. Yeah. So so it's interesting to me that something that I regard as like a 20-year-old attempt to reorganize left politics outside the Democratic Party is now the target of the people who are outside the Democratic Party trying to reorganize.
Yeah. All
right, so let's move on to another thing. I'll just mention this briefly, and maybe these guys have some response. This week, our local League of Women Voters, which is shout out to my mother-in-law, Mary Zimmerman.
She's president of.
She's president of. Maybe she gets mad if I. She wants to be very squeaky clean. She might. She's a big podcast listener. She listens to a lot of podcasts. Anyway, the local newspaper, The Daily Item, and the League of Women Voters have teamed up to do these town halls about different forms of different. Kind of, you know, nonpartisan, like good governance kinds of topics. This was about local governance. So two highlights that were great. Chip just stepped away, but we'll keep going.
Okay.
One was that one of our commissioners, a guy named Preston Boop, who's a Republican, kind of a free-thinking guy. I like him a lot, Preston.
He's the best compost in the county.
Yeah, he sells great organic soil. I bought some organic soil from him, Preston Boop. I think he also owns a sporting store where they sell like hunting stuff. Isn't that his store, Vicksburg?
Different Boop, I think.
Different Boop. All right, the Boops.
A lot of Boops around here.
A lot of Boops around here. And it's a name that, you know, when you've been here for a while, you stop laughing. But when I first got here, I was like, what? Anyway, I hope Preston doesn't listen.
But no, I like him a lot.
I hope Kristen does listen.
I hope he does listen. He had this great...
He's a good guy.
He had this great quote, which is he said, you know, I like to say we're not politicians. We're elected public servants. And I thought, that is some fine framing, you know, because to him, politician is a four-letter word, right? Or something like that. Although he's been a county commissioner for a long
years
time.
Years and years, like 15, decades.
20 years, something like that. And it's a position that pays $65,000 or $70,000.
A lot of power in that.
There's a lot of power. So anyway, so that was a fun quote from Preston. And I think it kind of captures this idea of people who think of themselves as amateur politicians, quote unquote. I just made air quotes on the podcast. That's such a newbie thing to do. Noob. And the other thing that was fun was Mifflinburg is a town just west of here.
A few miles.
And they had their borough manager, so that's the person who's paid to run the borough.
A little bit more conservative than Lewisburg.
Oh, yeah, a little bit. Quite a bit more conservative than Lewisburg. Yeah. And I think she was a CPA, or she seemed like an accountant, very... very, you know, straight-laced, whatever. And she starts talking about how they have a water utility, an electric utility, and a sewer utility, all municipally owned, and that she thinks it's really important because they don't have shareholders that they have to satisfy, and so they're able to deliver a lower price to their customers and good service. I mean, it was right out of, like, progressive economic policy.
Yeah, straight from the Midwest, these wonderful co-ops.
I know, and one of them, she had the dates. I think the water utility was the oldest, dated from, like, the early 19th century, and the electric utility was like chartered in 1930 and rechartered in 1950. This is Mifflinburg's very local, economically decentralized, dare I say, socialist municipal utilities. And in the paper, I don't remember where, a local township is getting ready to sell its utilities, and they're just smacking their lips in the coverage because they can plug budget holes with this windfall of money. I'm like, yeah, but once you privatize these little utilities, it's really hard to undo that. You know, it's hard to re-socialize or re-publicize them. So that was fun. Do you have any thoughts about these two nuggets from our local?
You know, I spent a great deal of time. Hillary Clinton is coming and speaking at Geisinger.
Yeah.
And
you're not
trying to
hit the topic, are you?
No, I'm not. This is not. So I am. But I was reading the Facebook comments, and all these people are decrying socialized medicine. You know, why should the government be involved in in hospitals?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, then they went on this. You know, all of these conservative commenters said, like, I can't believe that Geisinger is doing this. Like, this should be illegal. They shouldn't be able to buy all of these hospitals. Like, what are they doing? Like, we should be able to, like, tell them no. Like, they can't spend frivolous money on this sort of thing. Like, they shouldn't be able to buy up all these local hospitals. So I was like, you do realize that what you're talking about is socialized medicine. You know, it's just like... Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you're talking about the government going in and telling this nonprofit, you know, you know, it's like, have you not realized this contradiction that you've contradiction?
They haven't.
No, of course they haven't.
Yeah.
So, but rather than just, and you're not saying you're doing this, but I feel like, you know, sometimes liberals will just kind of look down their nose at that lack of consistency. But to me, it's like, okay, well, what do we do about that? How do we take advantage of that? How do we connect with them?
Yeah, no, I'm all for socialized medicine.
You are,
Let it be known. Yeah.
Yeah, no, but rather than, someone could hear what you're saying and think that you're saying, oh, these people, they're rubes, they don't understand that they're being inconsistent.
They're rubes.
I think that means dumb people.
That's all true.
Okay,
true.
I don't necessarily agree with what Chip said.
I don't agree with that.
But the point is, how do we make that an opportunity?
Instead
of just bitching about how they're intellectually inconsistent about what they want or they don't understand Hillary, what do we do about it?
I don't know. They're just complainers, man. What are you going to – grow up. You're an adult. You're just complaining.
No.
How is that
a communication strategy for
winning
votes? We've reached a consensus.
Fuck them.
Geisinger shouldn't – or, you know, maybe Geisinger should, but, you know, like
– No, even Geisinger. Any monopoly is a problem.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I completely agree with you and
I should say any unregulated monopoly.
Yeah. Not the public utility.
Yeah, I just realized what I said.
There should be limits as to, like, if Geisinger owns every single hospital in a 100-mile radius, the service will get worse.
We can put a placeholder in this because I know I've read and heard some research about this, but even nonprofit systems, and Geisinger, you know, I think in general has often lived up to its mission as a nonprofit. When there's no competition, prices will go up, quality will go down.
Yeah.
I don't. The reason I'm giving you a hard time, Chip, is because the whole point of what we're like doing this to say, like, you know, how can we grow the movement? How can we win votes? And these are people who legitimately think Geisinger is a problem, and they don't see that the, you know, Taylor's.
So how much time and energy do you want to spend on that person?
I don't know on that person, but like to me, like there's a true believer Trump voter, and we're not going to get through to them. And there's a lot of
never,
people.
You're never
okay, but there's a lot of people voted for Trump for different reasons. They weren't sure what else to do. They didn't like Hillary, whatever. But they're convincible. And so right now they're at the point where they're mad about our local nonprofit hospital system gobbling up and consolidating every local hospital that's not part of it. And
well,
how do we take their concern and then use that to pivot?
Well, first
leverage?
Of all, UPMC's
because,
buying up.
Because let me push back. Your answer was fuck them, they're stupid, or something like that.
They're complainers. well, UPMC's buying
I'm
up.
I'm a complainer.
So Geisinger's doing a lot around here, but UPMC's definitely
what's
getting
UPMC?
Bigger.
University of Pittsburgh Medical Center.
So they just bought out Williamsburg.
But I don't think if what you're suggesting is we end up where Geisinger has, you know, Lewisburg and Bloomsburg and Danville, and UPMC has, you know, Williamsport and Berwick, but in each town they're the only game in town. I don't think that's good.
No, I think competition is great for democracy.
Well, I don't care about democracy. I'm talking about
yeah.
I'm an educator.
Lowering premiums, quality health care.
Yeah, no, we need the competition. I mean, you know, we should invite the CEO of Evan is Kendra Ocker.
Yeah.
And she's got a great point of view because she's in the middle of all of this.
I know she is.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's flat out said, well, I don't want to quote her without letting her talk for herself. But, you know, I'm not a fan of monopolies and certainly not when it comes to healthcare. I don't think healthcare should be for profit.
But that's not, we're not talking about whether or not healthcare. We're talking about, and we'll stop now, but, you know, come back to it.
But let me make my point.
Well, no, because, I mean, you guys asked me to keep us more on target. Taylor brought up, what do we do about these people who are angry about what Geisinger's doing, but they don't see how that relates to the larger healthcare policy debate?
Yeah.
We shouldn't be having a healthcare policy debate. We should be talking about how do we reach those people.
Well, at some point, you have an obligation to educate yourself. Come on. I mean, you're an adult in the internet age. If you can't find access.
If the Democratic strategy to win is we're waiting for people to wake up and smell the coffee, we're fucked.
I don't mind reaching out to moderates or you know what I'm saying?
I think that a lot of people are moderates.
If you're still a Trump supporter at this point, you're not moderate.
Is moderate a coded word for they might be persuadable?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're still on Trump team right now, you're not a moderate. You're not persuadable.
I disagree. I'll put it on the record there. I disagree.
What do you think moderate means?
Well, no. I do think moderate is persuadable.
I said yes. I agree with that.
Yeah, no. But I think that...
I don't think every Trump. I mean, this is semantics. I mean, we should be clear at some point. There's like Trump supporters who you know, whatever, volunteer for him, gave him money, would vote for him, would argue with us about him, and then there's people who voted for him. And I don't see here you making a differentiation. To me, some of the people Taylor was talking about who are upset about Geisinger, a lot of them voted for Trump.
Rightfully,
a lot of them voted for him, but they're persuadable.
Yeah.
And if you're writing all of them off, I don't know how we're going to win.
I recently read a Politico article about the Montana governor Steve Pollock. Or Bullock, rather.
Yeah.
You know, I think the article said something like a quarter of all Montana voters in 2016 voted for Trump and Bullock, Democratic governor of Montana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and he did the retail of politics, and this goes back to what we were talking about earlier. If the Democrats went out there, campaigned in rural communities outside of our urban bastions of support, we might pick up a few votes. And what we need to say is, what we need to talk about is that worth it? And I say yes.
All right. We're going to, because we're running out of time, we're going to move on to sort of a shorter thing. I'm going to call it like, I'm always interested in language and framing and words. And two things came up recently that bugged me. One is about a referendum in Pennsylvania that has to do with
property taxes.
Property taxes. Basically, it's a referendum that allows, if it passes, would allow school districts that have taxing authority to go off the property tax. But anyway, they were talking about support for it and whatnot, and the phrase taxpayer group came up, and I was thinking, like, what a great example of framing from the other side, but ridiculous. Like, the three of us here are a taxpaying group. Rob, the owner of the lovely Civil War cider, came in. Now we're a taxpaying group. We all pay taxes. Everyone pays taxes. Everyone pays sales tax. Everyone who works pays payroll taxes. So this is bullshit. Anything that's called a taxpayer group is almost always a whiny, I don't want to pay taxes group and an anti-government group. You know, and they get a free pass because taxpayer group, it sounds like a sort of like Brookings Institution, like, oh, we want to consider like the implications of tax policy. It never is. They're never going to say, you know, oh, this would be a fair tax.
This makes sense. Yeah. Well, can you explain further the implications of us passing this referendum on?
I don't think I can say anything super intelligent about it because what I read said like it seems like a big deal, but actually it probably wouldn't mean much in practice.
I don't have a lot to add to this, but I will tell you, I met with Fred Keller last week, and this issue came up
about school taxes.
About property taxes being used to fund schools, yeah.
I mean, I don't agree with that. I talked to somebody, a voter, about it the other day.
That's an issue.
All over the phone.
I mean, this referendum, I think...
It's a stupid way to
let me say this and reserve the right to change what I'm going to say. If the referendum is, should we allow people to not pay property taxes, people are going to vote yes, because that sounds like I don't get to pay property tax. If you framed it as... we are going to change the way we pay for schools. A, do you think schools are important? Everybody says yes. B, do you want to pay for schools with a property tax, with a sales tax, or with a local income tax? Then they're going to be like, I don't know. But the way it's phrased just sounds like now you're going to have to pay property tax. But that's stupid because we're not going to raid the schools.
It's just going to lead to a budget deficit.
So in Alaska, there aren't any property taxes because they use the oil revenues.
Okay.
Right? And I proposed to Keller, why aren't we taxing these frackers? We're pulling all this money out of the ground and leaving us a
tax.
Fred Keller's our local state representative, by the way.
Yeah. Is there a chance that Pennsylvania, because they're pulling all this money out of the ground and leaving...
What was Fred Keller's reaction to your proposal?
There is an impact fee. So it's severance tax versus impact fee.
Okay.
Impact fee is local, county. Mm-hmm. Severance tax, it goes into a central kitty in Harrisburg.
There's another big difference, which is impact fee is flat per well, versus severance tax would be based on how much you pump, which is a very important difference. But
It is. And even the Democrats in the northern tier of this district... there are a lot of Democrats who love the impact fees. They're paying for the schools, the roads. They love the impact fee. And so there's a big fight between impact fee or severance tax.
Okay, but we've wandered far away. Like, now we're talking about how we fund schools. That's not the point. The point is that labeling yourself a taxpayer group, you get a free pass in the media for sounding like you're like a middle-of-the-road policy group, when really you're a pretty extreme version of all taxpayer groups are like, I don't like the government. I don't ever want to pay taxes.
The thing that pisses me off about this is that, like, once again, it comes back to this whole idea, this the whole thing where, like, the Democrats are the ones defending some tax, which is stupid. But, like, honestly, it's the fiscally responsible thing.
Yeah, I don't like taxes.
I hate taxes, especially
I like schools.
they're the worst. Property taxes are the least efficient way.
Property taxes unfairly target, like, fixed income,
elderly people.
They've already paid into the system for years.
In the Lewisburg borough, which isn't the same as the school district, but overlaps a lot, 54% of the property in Lewisburg borough is not taxed because it's nonprofits, which is mostly Bucknell. And, you know, Bucknell just bought another house, the judge's house over. And so I don't know the mechanics of this, but that's going off the payroll tax.
Yeah,
and it was a big, lovely house that I'm sure paid a lot of property tax.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a whole other thing about that.
I hate defending taxes.
I hate defending taxes. But I love defending
schools.
But
here we are, you know.
Well, yeah, you're right. It is stupid because somehow we let ourselves get painting into somehow we're defending taxes when usually what we're defending is the idea.
The totally wrong.
It's totally wrong. All right. The other one that I just want to mention briefly because I got a letter to the editor about it.
You did or you published one?
Well, they called me, so I think maybe they want to publish. I don't know. Do they call you all the time? They called me and said, is this really you?
No, that's good. That's good to know. So they're following up.
Does that mean that they'll publish it?
Probably.
I would think they wouldn't bother.
Who called you?
Lynn, I think.
Don't know Lynn.
In the newsroom?
Yeah.
You know her?
No, but I was going to say if it was Frank or Dennis or Bill Bowman, I mean, those guys, if they call, it's for sure going.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was the publisher or the chief editor. So basically, there was an article in the Daily Item which was talking about Pruitt's rescinding of the clean coal power plant plan.
Yeah.
Something that Obama did.
Well, it was the clean power plan. Get the word coal out of that.
Clean power plan.
Yeah, clean power plan was what Obama was in it. That's all those things that they're... Did you go to that one in Williamsport? Anyway, don't say clean coal power plan.
No, that's not what it was. I'm not trying to reuse the clean coal, but whatever they're... anyway, so what was interesting to me was they were talking to people in the local area region who have vested interests in the coal industry.
Yeah, a coal construction plant, right?
Yeah, one person was like a spokesperson for a coal consortium. Another was somebody who owns a coal mine. And look, that's totally cool. Like, you know, they have a right to their opinion. What bugged me was that the article took, I think, Imagine Pruitt's framing of the war on coal is over, and they kept talking about the war on coal. And you know that was never government policy, and I feel like that works partly because the U.S. government has had talked about war on poverty, war on drugs, war on terrorism. Those three are the big ones, and that was used by the government as like a way to signal a particular policy agenda. There was never a war on coal. That is pure coal industry propaganda. And I even dug around and found that in 1988 was the first time it was like I can't say the very first, but it was the earliest record in a very good database of it being used in a magazine called like Coal Weekly, one of these industry things. So it's been floating around for a long time, building up steam as a way to frame this issue. And my point was the Daily Item can report on it, but they shouldn't. They should have more journalistic integrity to not just pass on these frames.
They should.
And instead of saying, they could have said the so-called war on coal, or they could have said the Obama policy, plan, which the industry called the war on coal, but instead they just said war on coal as if that was the policy. And that kind of framing, I think, has a really pernicious and damaging effect on people's opinions.
Reasserting this framing. Yeah.
I've said before, we have a failure of journalism in this country. We really do. And they have to start reporting the facts instead of just regurgitating that kind of stuff. And that's what they do a lot of the time.
They do. And it's weird. And they're like, oh, we're losing, subscriptions and circulation. And I'm like, I hear that. And for sure, obviously the internet posts
seriously cut back.
And then a lot of the response has been to cut staff. And so they have fewer people. I mean, this article, the guy went to the trouble to interview lots of local people who like this. And then the only thing he had about concerns was he looked to me like he just went on like the Sierra Club's page to see what they said. I was thinking like, this is maybe an opportunity for us. I was like, there's lots of people around this area who are experts on coal, who know about its impact, or other stakeholders.
Let's talk about somebody that lives next to a coal-fired power plant.
And in fact, and we should wrap up pretty soon.
And the health effects.
So the Daily Item is interesting, and they have their own website that has comments. Almost no one comments there. All of the comments for the local newspaper are on on Facebook. The Daily Item publishes their articles on Facebook. And this one had about 14 or 15 responses. And we would guess, because we know this area, that of those 11 or 12, 75 to 80% would probably be pro-Republican, pro-Trump, right?
Yeah.
Like, agreeing with this. I think you were with me. I counted, 12 out of the 14 seemed to be more or less, criticizing Trump or saying that this was a mistake. Like, funny comments like, oh, next is, the war on black and white TV, or, I'm looking forward to getting the smog back. Right. So I don't know why this article in particular didn't.
Yeah.
Right. It didn't trigger the local.
The
same day you mentioned the Hillary Clinton thing, I didn't even read them, but the Hillary Clinton article, her coming in Geisinger, had 283 comments, and I guarantee you, huge numbers of them were
279.
And she's a stupid bitch, and just the worst kind of misogyny that I don't even know all the phrasing.
Yeah. So she should go to Muncie, where there's the prison.
That's
prison.
Like,
yeah.
That was some of the comments.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to make of that. This one, this thing that you would think. Supposed to make local people, all the coal jobs are going to come back.
If you grow up in, I did in Winfield, and you got a coal-fired power plant, less than 10 miles away in Shamokin Dam, and you have fucking asthma, you might have a different opinion about it. I don't have asthma, but I did grow up in Winfield.
Thank you. All right, I think we're going to wrap up there. Thanks for tuning in. Bye.
See you next time.
And next time we will have.
Are we still recording?
Yeah, we are still recording.
Okay.
Next time we are doing a sort of a special on the PA 18 special election. Tune in next week brainstorming.
Barnstorming.
It's catching on. It's catching on. Maybe we'll have another website next time.
A whole nother oh. For brainstorming.
For brainstorming.
I'm going to talk a lot more next time.
You did great.
Yeah, I thought it was a good episode.
A lot more. All right.
Yeah, we're hardly over the 30-minute limit.
All right.
Bye.
There it is.